All the COVID-19 might have postponed the games. It has not defeated them.
The Olympics are underway with support from the World Health Organization. It's Thursday, July 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, officials warn against what they say are divisive political protests at the Summer Games. Beijing denies allegations it's behind a major cyber attack against Microsoft. For many Afghans, the future is worrisome. Sharp increases in new COVID-19 cases in Australia, and a look at the Amazon founder's journey to space. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The Tokyo Olympics should go ahead to demonstrate to the world what can be achieved with the right plan and measures amid the COVID-19 pandemic. World Health Organization head Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said that on Wednesday, speaking to the International Olympic Committee members at their session in the Japanese capital. Tedros said the world needed the Olympics now as a celebration of hope.
In the 125-year history of the modern games, they have been held in the shadow of war, economic crisis, and geopolitical turmoil. And you know it. No one knows better than you. But never before have they been organized in the shadow of pandemic. And although COVID-19 might have postponed the games, it has not defeated them.
So far, there have been 67 cases of COVID-19 infections in the country, among those accredited for the Games since July 1st, despite strict entry measures. Although some Olympic contests have already taken place, the opening ceremony takes place July 23rd, amid questions over their safety, with tens of thousands of foreigners arriving. You can find out more about this story at voanews.com and our many digital platforms. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. The former executive editor of now-defunct Apple Daily newspaper has been arrested in Hong Kong on suspicion of conspiring to collude with foreign forces. Workers in the Philippines start to exhume the remains of Filipinos killed in President Duterte's drug war as the leases on the graves expire. Myanmar's military rulers again seek to replace that country's ambassador to the UN, who opposes their takeover of the government. Afghan fighting eases as Taliban observe de facto Eid ceasefire. South Korea reports record daily COVID-19 infections as Delta variant drives surge. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. Olympic officials are warning against what they say are divisive political protests at the Summer Games in Tokyo. But as VOA's Bill Gallo reports, the event may be the perfect opportunity for athlete activism.
Global Black Lives Matter protests, a Me Too movement in support of women's rights, both sprung up in the years since the last Summer Olympics, and both may influence the Tokyo Games.
I think we have a perfect storm, if you will, for an outburst of athlete activism that is rooted in fighting for black freedom and also for human rights in general.
In the U.S., professional basketball players have been at the forefront of anti-racism protests. Many will now compete in Tokyo. U.S. soccer star Megan Rapinoe has also been outspoken for equal pay.
And I've been told that I don't deserve any more than less because I am a woman.
Olympic protests aren't new. The most iconic was the Black Power salute by U.S. athletes Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Games. The International Olympic Committee later introduced Rule 50, which bans player protests. The rule was loosened this year, but IOC chief Thomas Bach recently warned against what he called divisive protests, saying the podium and medal ceremonies are not meant for politics, which is ironic given that the IOC's own website praises Carlos and Smith as legends.
And they say what courage it took for them to do that. And I agree, it took a lot of courage. But they've made a new rule. Even these guidelines do not permit there to be a new John Carlos or Tommy Smith at the Tokyo Olympics.
Some conservatives in the U.S. say athletes should stick to sports, but the trend is in the other direction. The Olympics is no exception.
The Olympic Games, an international sport, is so entwined with politics, with all of the national symbols. It's the flags, it's the anthems, it's the emblems on the uniform, you know, the uniforms being in those national colors.
It's the biggest platform many players will ever have, and it's likely we'll be seeing what matters most to them. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Happening now in Asia, the Philippines' top judges have ruled that the International Criminal Court can prosecute government actors for alleged crimes committed before the country withdrew from the tribunal, contradicting President Rodrigo Duterte's assertion it has no jurisdiction. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We continue now on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Beijing has denied allegations that it's behind a major cyber attack against Microsoft Exchange, a popular email platform used by companies worldwide. Earlier this week, NATO, the European Union, Australia, Britain, Canada, Japan, and New Zealand joined the United States in accusing Chinese state-sponsored actors of malicious cyber activity. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swera has this report.
The massive global hack of the Microsoft Exchange email server software was first discovered in January and began infecting tens of thousands of accounts worldwide in late February. Earlier this week, the Biden administration called out China for the cyber attacks. Beijing said the allegations were fabricated. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lichan.
China once again strongly requests the U.S. and its allies to stop cyber theft and cyber attacks targeting China. Stop pouring dirty water over China on the issue of cybersecurity.
On Monday, U.S. President Joe Biden accused the Chinese government of protecting the hackers.
The Chinese government, not unlike the Russian government, is not doing this themselves, but are protecting those who are doing it and maybe even accommodating them being able to do it.
NATO, the European Union, Australia, Britain, Canada, Japan, and New Zealand have joined the Biden administration in accusing Beijing of sponsoring malicious cyber activity. The U.S. has charged four Chinese nationals in connection to a state-led espionage campaign targeting the U.S. and other countries. Acting U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of California, Randy Grossman.
The indictment alleges that three of the four defendants were intelligence officers with China's Ministry of State Security, or MSS. They implemented the alleged cyber attacks through front companies in order to conceal the government's role in the illicit scheme.
But the Biden administration has not penalized Beijing with sanctions or diplomatic expulsions, as it did in response to Russian cyber attacks in recent months. Adam Siegel is the director of the Digital and Cyberspace Policy Program at the Council on Foreign Relations.
They're worried about China retaliating, probably against U.S. companies that are doing business inside of China. And I think there's probably difficulty in getting a number of the allies, probably smaller European states with close economic relations with China, to go along with any broad sanctions on China.
The White House said the investigation on foreign cyber attacks is ongoing and it is not ruling out future punitive measures. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
This is not the conclusion of our efforts as it relates to cyber activities with China or Russia.
China says it opposes all forms of cybercrime and claims most cyber attacks come from the U.S. Analysts say countries including the U.S., China, and Russia routinely engage in cyber espionage and are unlikely to stop. Again, Adam Siegel of CFR.
I am more hopeful that we can have some type of agreement on attacks that are destructive, so that either destroy data or destroy systems. The ransomware attack on the Colonial Pipeline, which forced Colonial to take the pipeline offline for several days, is the type of attack that we want to come up with some agreed shared norms with China and Russia and others.
In 2015, then-President Barack Obama and Chinese leader Xi Jinping agreed the two countries will mitigate cyber attacks and investigate cyber crimes originating within their borders. But this latest cyber rift will likely deepen tensions in the U.S.-China relationship. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Mass flooding has left terrifying scenes in China's central Henan province, where at least a dozen people have been killed when their subway line flooded. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson reports.
Large swathes of China's central Henan province were underwater on Wednesday, following days of torrential rain. In the capital, Zhongzhou, at least 12 people were killed when a subway line was flooded. Video showed commuters chest-deep in murky floodwaters and an underground station turned into a large churning pool. More than 500 people were pulled to safety. This man was one of them.
The flood was so strong and many people were carried away by that. The remaining few of us, including a kid, were so tired and we nearly gave up. We kept holding on tight to the railing. That's why you can see many bruises on my arms. These are all the bruises. This is one too. This included too. If you don't hold on tight to the railing, it's very easy to be washed away.
The flooding has inundated much of the city and the surrounding area. Henan is a major logistics hub in central China and has a population of around 100 million. Since the weekend, millions of lives there have been upended as trains have been suspended, highways closed, and flights delayed or cancelled. Residents caught in the flood have taken shelter in libraries, cinemas, and museums. Schools and hospitals have also been cut off by waterlogging. One hospital in the provincial capital has lost all power and is racing to find transport to relocate about 600 critically ill patients. The unusually active rainy season has led to the rapid rise of a number of rivers in the vast Yellow River Basin. Dozens of reservoirs and dams have breached warning levels, prompting about 100,000 people to be evacuated to safe zones. Weather watchers say it's the heaviest rain the province has seen in 1,000 years.
Flora Bradley Watson reporting.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. North Korean media is urging the country's young people not to use South Korean slang, encouraging them to instead only speak the nation's traditional language. Warnings have also been issued against dressing like South Koreans, listening to music by South Korean artists, or wearing hairstyles similar to their southern counterpart. Twenty years after freeing Afghanistan from the grip of the Taliban, U.S. and NATO troops are leaving. For a generation of Afghans who grew up during that time, the future is worrisome. VOA's Arash Arabasadi explains.
Recently, on the streets of Kandahar, a Humvee carrying Afghan special forces came under attack from Taliban fighters. The next day, the Taliban reportedly raised their signature white flag over a key border crossing with Pakistan. This video comes from a Taliban spokesman, and VOA cannot independently verify its content, but it claims to show an unnamed Taliban fighter at the border pledging the group's commitment to safeguarding Afghan security forces and local businesses. But many Afghans see the Taliban as a threat to their way of life. Medina Sadat is a civil rights activist and mother of two. She lives in Kabul and says the mood in Afghanistan is changing.
When the U.S. and NATO and European countries got involved in Afghanistan, people started to live normal lives. But when foreign agencies decided to leave Afghanistan, a fear spread, especially among women. We are worried about what will happen to us and what will happen to our family members in the future.
Meanwhile, from his shop in Kabul, Murtaza, who has only been in business for a year, has his own concerns as a small business owner.
We want a better future, a future without war, without coronavirus, and without steep prices, because we all want a peaceful life.
He adds that uncertainty for his business rises as the Taliban's footprint grows.
I must say I'm very worried. Maybe many problems will multiply, and maybe I won't be able to support my family. Our biggest fear is that if the Taliban enter Kabul, they will create massive fear and terror in people's minds and drive them away from their homes.
Murtaza says the international community should do more to pressure the Taliban into joining a peace process with the Afghan government. Medina Sadat doesn't see that happening.
Taliban are the same as they were 20 years ago. The ideology is the same as before. Life under Taliban rule is like you are in a cage, especially for women. Like mothers around the world, I want the best life for my kids, a better and bright future. But I don't see that for kids with the Taliban's comeback. I worry their basic rights will be violated. I am fearful for my son, but even more worried about my daughter.
The Biden administration pledged ongoing financial support for the Afghan government, but those living increasingly close to the violence with memories of life under Taliban rule are concerned that pledge may not be enough. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Turkey is going ahead with its plans to take over security at the Kabul International Airport after the pullout of U.S. troops, despite opposition from the Taliban. Ankara is in negotiations with Washington to secure the airport, which analysts say is key to maintaining stability and an international presence in Afghanistan. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
The Taliban has warned Turkey of severe consequences if its military remains in Afghanistan when other foreign forces pull out. But Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, in remarks this week, appeared to play down those threats and indicated negotiations would continue.
Şu an itibariyle gerek dışişleri nezdinde.
Erdogan says whether at the level of the foreign ministry or at his level, Turkey is trying to see what kind of talks it can hold with the Taliban and where these talks can take them. Ankara is banking on its historical ties with Afghanistan and its status as NATO's only predominantly Muslim member to help ease Taliban opposition. The 500-person Turkish force in Afghanistan has also avoided any military confrontation with the Taliban. However, Hussein Baja, head of the Ankara-based Foreign Affairs Institute, who has recently returned from the region, warned Ankara is overestimating its position.
Any Turkish participation concerning the airport would be disastrous for Turkish foreign policy. Taliban, they stated they don't like Tayyip Erdogan and they don't like Turkey's military presence. Taliban is very determined to kick out all the forces. Turkey's presence there is definitely unwanted.
Turkey is continuing discussions with Washington over the airport mission. Both sides describe the talks as productive. Relations between the NATO members have been deeply strained, especially over Ankara's deepening ties with Moscow. İlhan Özgel, a columnist for the Duvar news portal, says Ankara sees the Kabul airport mission as key to repairing relations with Washington.
The most important thing is that the AKP government is trying to fix the ties with the Biden administration and they want to offer something good for them. Ankara is trying to prove that it's a very good ally, it's a precious ally that they cannot be lost and they cannot be ignored.
Turkey is looking to its close allies, Pakistan and Qatar, which some observers say have close relations with the Taliban, to overcome opposition from the group. But Baja warns that with the Taliban believing it's on the verge of assuming power, the importance of those countries is diminishing.
Taliban does not consider Pakistan and Qatar and Turkey as the countries which should be on the priority list. No, they are not. Politically speaking, Russia, China and America. Maybe India to a certain degree. Taliban say we establish our state, then we negotiate.
With only a matter of weeks left before the pullout of American forces is complete, analyst Özgel warns if the Taliban maintains its opposition, Ankara could find itself trapped.
If Turkey insists on maintaining troops there after the withdrawal of NATO, which has already happened, that would be risky. If Turkey concedes to Taliban's recent statement, that would be a humiliation for Turkey.
With Ankara having little leverage over the Taliban, Özgel suggests a last-minute collapse in U.S.-Turkish talks over the airport operation could provide a face-saving option for Ankara, but at a cost to bilateral ties. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Making headlines in Asia, a report from Human Rights Watch says the Myanmar junta's military tribunals have sentenced 65 people to death following trials since the military coup on February 1st. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Australia's two largest states reported sharp increases in new COVID-19 cases Wednesday, a blow to hopes that lockdown restrictions would be lifted with more than half the country's population under stay-at-home orders. Reuters' Emma McCarthy reports.
Australia's two largest states reported sharp increases in new COVID-19 cases on Wednesday, with more than half the country's population now under stay-at-home orders. New South Wales reported 110 new cases, up from 78 the day before, nearly 4 weeks into a lockdown of Sydney and surrounding areas to contain an outbreak of the Delta variant. Victoria clocked 22 new cases and a third state, South Australia, went into its first full day of a week-long lockdown on Wednesday. A year and a half into the pandemic, there's pressure on the federal government, which has seen its polling at its lowest in a year due to a sluggish immunisation program. Just over 11% of the population is fully vaccinated. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian said the lockdown end date of July 30 can only be reached if those numbers improve.
We won't live as freely as we need to or we would like until those vaccination rates increase. Now, that is one thing the New South Wales government can't control. We can't control the doses we get.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison said on Wednesday that he took responsibility for both delays in the country's vaccination rollout as well as for the solutions to make up for lost ground.
Emma McCarthy reporting. Space company Blue Origin and Amazon founder Jeff Bezos rocketed to space Tuesday with the world's oldest and youngest people to ever fly in space in tow. VOA's Laurel Bowman has more.
And they are back after an historic suborbital flight that included the world's richest man, Jeff Bezos, the world's oldest person in space, 82-year-old Mary Wallace Wally Funk, and the youngest, 18-year-old Oliver Damon.
Go, Jeff, go, Mark, go, Wally, go, Oliver, you are going to space.
Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos and his brother and crew blasted off from West Texas Tuesday. The New Shepard rocket carrying them was named after America's first astronaut. It flew on the 52nd anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. In the roughly 10-minute-long flight, Bezos and his crew reached an altitude of 65 miles and experienced 3 minutes of weightlessness before a touchdown that technical experts described as like sitting softly in a chair. Okay, maybe not.
Touchdown. Welcome back, New Shepard's first human crew.
The most profound piece of it for me was looking out at the Earth and looking at the Earth's atmosphere. Every astronaut, everybody who's been up into space, they say this, that it changes them, and they look at it and they're kind of amazed and awestruck by the Earth and its beauty, but also by its fragility.
And I want to thank you, sweetheart, because you made it possible for me. I've been waiting a long time to finally get it up there.
Bezos' trip follows last week's successful suborbital journey by Virgin Galactic billionaire Richard Branson.
I was once a kid with a dream, looking up to the stars. And now I'm an adult in a spaceship looking back to our beautiful Earth. To the next generation of dreamers, if we can do this, just imagine what you can do.
Some have criticized the flights as joyrides for the wealthy. But before the flight, Bezos said his had purpose.
What we're hoping to do is to build the road to space so that future generations, and maybe Oliver and people of his generation, will be able to do amazing things in space if we have practice and get good at reusable vehicles. So that's the real goal.
And many analysts say that competition among commercial space travel companies brings launch costs down. They say that ultimately boosts scientific research and expands space exploration. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heibels, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead.